Hi everyone, welcome to the Daily Gospel Exegesis. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you learned something new about the Bible today. We're looking at John chapter 6 verses 1 to 15. That's the gospel reading you would hear at today's Mass. And this is the feeding of the 5,000, John's version of that event. Jesus went off to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or of Tiberias, and a large crowd followed him, impressed by the signs he gave by curing the sick. Jesus climbed the hillside and sat down there with his disciples. It was shortly before the Jewish feast of Passover. Looking up, Jesus saw the crowds approaching and said to Philip, "Where can we buy bread for these people to eat?" He only said this to test Philip. He himself knew exactly what he was going to do. Philip answered, 200 denarii would only buy enough to give them a small piece each. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said, "There is a small boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what is that between so many?" Jesus said to them, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass there, and as many as 5,000 men sat down. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and gave them out to all who were sitting ready. He then did the same with the fish, giving out as much as was wanted. When they had eaten enough, he said to the disciples, "Pick up the pieces left over, so that nothing gets wasted." So they picked them up and filled 12 hampers with scraps left over from the meal of 5 barley loaves. The people, seeing the sign that he had given, said, "This really is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, who could see that they were about to come and take him by force and make him a king, escaped to the hills by himself. So we're at John chapter 6. John chapter 5, which comes just before that, that's read in the fourth week of Lent. Now we're up to John chapter 6, and we have the feeding of the 5,000. This is an event which is in all four Gospels. Now, as you probably know, John typically doesn't include events from the Synoptic Gospels because he feels that there's no point going over ground that's already been covered by the other Gospel authors. He wants to add in new things only, basically. But this is one of those events that he does include, even though it's been covered by the other three Gospels. Why does he include the feeding of the 5,000? Probably because he considers it so important for understanding Jesus' identity, which is what John is trying to emphasize. And in particular, it forms the backdrop for what Jesus will say later in chapter 6 about the Eucharist. So a few verses later, in fact, the following day, Jesus has an interesting conversation about the Eucharist, which is based on the feeding of the 5,000. So John feels it's necessary to include this background. So what we're going to see here in the feeding of the 5,000 is that John includes some details that the others don't have, and vice versa. Verse 1, Jesus went off to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. So Jesus has been in Jerusalem, according to John, and now he travels to Galilee in the north. And that's where Jesus does most of his ministry. John only includes this particular event, as in the feeding of the 5,000, but we know from the other Gospels that around this time period, Jesus does a whole lot of other stuff in the area of Galilee. Galilee is where he does most of his ministry. That's where he's from. Verse 2, a large crowd followed him, impressed by the signs he gave by curing the sick. Now, we learn from the other Gospels that what's been happening is Jesus has been out on the boat on the Sea of Galilee with the disciples, and he's been trying to have some alone time with them and to rest. But while they were gone, while they were out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, the crowds have worked out where Jesus is, where he's probably going to land, and they run to the other side of the lake. So they're waiting for Jesus by the time he steps ashore. And based on what's occurred so far in the Gospel of John, it would appear that a lot of the crowd really is just looking for a miracle. They're perhaps not genuinely seeking God, although some of them probably are. And it's so John just says large crowd at this point, although we later learn that it's 5,000 men, so we're probably talking at least 15,000 people if you factor in women and children. This is a big crowd. There's lots of people following Jesus by this point. Verse 3, Jesus climbed the hillside and sat down there with his disciples. And even today, if you go to the Sea of Galilee, there's lots of hills surrounding this area. Other translations have this as Jesus went up the mountain. And that might be deliberately trying to recall when Moses went up the mountain, because Jesus is depicted as the new Moses in the Gospels. Now, John doesn't tell us this, but the other Gospels do. They tell us that at this point, as the crowds come up the hill to see Jesus, Jesus has compassion on them and he begins to teach them. We also know that it's starting to get late, meaning that the people won't be able to get to the villages in time before the villages close. So if they want to get food, they need to leave soon. That's what the other Gospel authors tell us about this event. Verse 4, it was shortly before the Jewish feast of Passover. Now, why does John mention this? What's the point of mentioning the Feast of Passover? Well, it will come in important later in John chapter 6. But it could also be because around Passover time, just for practical reasons, it will be hard to find enough food for people in the markets because everyone is buying food for the Passover. So maybe Jesus is concerned, not only is it getting late, but it's the Passover and the people, if they don't move soon, they won't be able to get food from the market. But there might be a more spiritual reason why John mentions the Passover. It could be that John's concern here is to unfold the spiritual relationship between Jesus and the Exodus event and the very first Passover in the book of Exodus, particularly in terms of providing food in the wilderness. We've talked about this on the podcast a bit when we looked at the other Gospels version of the feeding of the 5,000. Clearly, there's supposed to be parallels with feeding the Israelites in the wilderness with manna, and now Jesus feeds these people, which is essentially out in a desert area as well. Verse 5, looking up, Jesus saw the crowds approaching and said to Philip, "Where can we buy some bread for these people to eat?" Now, the fact that John knows that Jesus asked Philip suggests that John was an eyewitness. He doesn't say he asked the disciples. He's actually quite specific. He says, Jesus asked Philip. Now, Philip is just one of the disciples. He's not particularly well known, but in this case, Jesus asks Philip. And then John adds in this comment, he only said this to test Philip. He himself knew exactly what he was going to do. So Jesus wants to see if Philip has enough faith to know that the crowd will be provided for. It kind of is testing Philip. Jesus is saying, I wonder what Philip is going to say in response to my question. And John is, looking back on the event, says that Jesus had a plan all along. Verse 7, and Philip replies, 200 denarii would only be enough to give them a small piece each. A denarii was a single day's wage, and it's what Philip is saying here. It could imply that they had 200 denarii in their sort of ministry supply of money. That's possible. But certainly what he's saying is that they would need 200 days' wages, 200 denarii, in order to feed the people just enough food. And it's probably likely that they wouldn't have had that much. So they need at least 200 denarii in order to feed people. So if you could say Philip failed the test here. He didn't answer by having trust in Jesus. Verse 8, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. So we're talking here about Andrew. Notice how the primacy of Peter is highlighted though. Andrew is always referred to in relation to Peter, because Peter is the most important of the apostles. How would you like that, always being referred to not as yourself as an individual, but in relation to your brother? And so Andrew says, there is a small boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what is that between so many? Now, only John tells us this detail, that there's a small boy that gives him the food. And he mentions barley loaves. So the small boy has barley loaves, which is typical food for poor people. Verse 10, Jesus said to them, make the people sit down. So Jesus hears what he needs to hear. He hears there's 5 loaves and 2 fish, and Jesus springs into action. He says, get them to sit down. And basically, he's telling them to get ready for a meal. In the Greek, more literally, it says, make the people recline. So he's getting them ready for a typical meal. There was plenty of grass there, and as many as 5,000 men sat down. This language of the grass is highlighted in the Gospel of Mark as well. So this is an indication that John is familiar with the Gospel of Mark. So we know from the other Gospels that Jesus gets them to sit down in groups, and it's a pretty big task for the disciples to manage 15,000 people. So this could have taken a little while to get people in the groups. Verse 11, then Jesus took the loaves and gave thanks. Now, it was common at that time for the man presiding over a meal to give a blessing and then break the food. That was a common practice, particularly amongst the Essenes at Qumran. They would do this for every meal. They would say a blessing and then break the bread. So some have said that the Essenes at Qumran would not have been surprised by Jesus instituting the Eucharist because they were already doing a form of it. So that's an interesting side comment about the Essenes. So there's more to it though, because for John's readers, when John says here, he took the bread and gave thanks, obviously for John's readers, they're going to think of the Last Supper. The word for gave thanks here is Eucharistio, so they're definitely going to be thinking of the Eucharist. And this is basically why John includes this story, because this is a Eucharistic story, and John is about to go on and tell us lots of specific information about the Eucharist. And Jesus gave them out to all who were sitting ready. So John doesn't say this, but we know from the other Gospels that the disciples distribute the food to the groups. And then he did the same with the fish. But notice the bread is described first. The bread is the focus. The fish is only secondary. Verse 12, when they had eaten enough, he said to the disciples, pick up the pieces left over so that nothing gets wasted. So it's a big meal, and Jesus is thinking practically, for such a big meal like this, the disciples are going to want to collect leftovers so that they can use it for their own future meals. Now, some scholars think this might be a deliberate reference to the manna in the wilderness. If you know the story of God feeding the Israelites with the manna in the wilderness, the Israelites are specifically told by God, don't take extra food, don't gather anything extra, just get what you need. But here, Jesus says to the disciples, get leftovers, get extra. So maybe John is trying to highlight how Jesus is both like God in providing the manna, but also kind of unlike that story as well. So that's possible. Other translations have this phrase as, gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost. And there might be a theological meaning here in terms of lost referring to salvation, but that's just speculation. So they picked them up and filled 12 hampers with scraps left over from the meal of 5 barley loaves. So there might be some significance to the number 12. Maybe that indicates that God is going to provide for the 12 tribes of Israel. Maybe that God is making a new Israel through the 12 apostles. Or it could just be literally John is saying how amazing this miracle is. He's saying there's 12 baskets which were produced from only 5 barley loaves. When does the multiplication happen? The story doesn't tell us when the food gets multiplied. So most likely it happened when the apostles were given the food from Jesus. At the point that Jesus hands it to the apostles is when it gets miraculously multiplied. But that's just speculation. Notice though that Jesus doesn't make food out of thin air. He actually takes what's already there and he multiplies it. And that's significant. Now there are similar miracles to this in the Old Testament, particularly in 2 Kings 4. Elisha, the prophet, multiplies 20 loaves for 100 men and they still have some left over. So this Jesus doing this miracle would have made the Jews think of that miracle. But Jesus shows that he's greater than Elisha because he starts with fewer loaves and he feeds a larger crowd. Verse 14, now it gets interesting. The people seeing this sign that he had given, and signs is a big theme in John's gospel. If you read the Gospel of John, essentially signs are miracles that are meant to point people towards recognizing his identity as the Son of God. Now, interestingly, there's one other food sign in the Gospel of John, and that's the one where the wine is multiplied at the wedding of Cana. So in both food miracles, and the two miracles that we have involving food, what does Jesus multiply? He multiplies bread and he multiplies wine. So John is clearly setting up the significance of the Eucharist. And the crowd says, this really is the prophet who is to come into the world. So who's this prophet that they're talking about? The Jews at the time believed that one day there would be a great prophet that they had come to call the prophet, and that's predicted in Deuteronomy 18:15. Moses himself says, "There will be a prophet like me that comes one day." So the Jews at the time of Jesus are waiting for this prophet. Some of the Jews believe that the prophet would be the same person as the Messiah, and that appears to be what the crowd is thinking here. The crowd is recognizing that Jesus is the prophet and also that he's the Messiah. And another interesting fact is some people at the time of Jesus believed that when the Messiah returned, he would bring a new kind of manna, like the one that was in the wilderness, but better. So that's an interesting link to the Eucharist as well. So they think he's the Messiah. Verse 15, Jesus, who could see that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king. What's going on here? The Jews at the time believed that the Messiah was going to be like a military political leader who would wipe out the Romans. That's the basic idea they had of the Messiah. And they think that Jesus, because he's the Messiah, they think that that's what he's going to be. So they try to grab him, they gather around him as a big crowd, and they want to proclaim him as this military king. Now, Jesus is a king, no doubt about it. And in fact, on Palm Sunday, he presents himself as a king. But he doesn't agree with the way the crowds were going about it here. He doesn't agree with the idea of kingship that they have in mind. He's not a military leader, and he's not going to accept that view of himself. And also, he doesn't want to cause chaos this early in his ministry. He doesn't want there to be a big riot. He knows that he still has some years to do ministry before he can be arrested. So Jesus is not denying that he's a king, but he doesn't want to be taken as king this way. So Jesus withdraws again to the hills by himself. He gets out of there quickly. We know from the other Gospels that he gives some instructions to his disciples, and he tells the disciples to go on ahead without him and get in the boat while he goes up to the hills. And later that night, he comes to them walking on the water. And that's the very next thing that John narrates. So an interesting passage, particularly when we combine in all the information about this event from the other Gospels. So there's two brief catechism references to this passage that help us understand Catholic teaching. So paragraph 439 is in the discussion about Christ, which is another word for Messiah. Many Jews and even certain Gentiles who shared their hope recognized in Jesus the fundamental attributes of the Messianic Son of David, promised by God to Israel. Jesus accepted his rightful title of Messiah, though with some reserve because it was understood by some of his contemporaries in too human a sense as essentially political. And this passage in John chapter 6 is the best example of where people misunderstand the role of the Messiah, certainly. But then paragraph 559 clarifies it for us. This is talking about Palm Sunday. It says, "How will Jerusalem welcome her Messiah? Although Jesus had always refused popular attempts to make him king, he chooses the time and prepares the details for his messianic entry into the city of his father David." And the paragraph goes on from there. So from there we learn that later Jesus does allow himself to be called king on Palm Sunday. So we'll leave it there for today. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you learned something new, and please continue to share this podcast with others who are interested in studying the Bible from a Catholic perspective.